شهر الطاعة والإيمان، شهر الرحمة والغفران، شهر الطاعة والإيمان، شهر الرحمة والغفران.
أيامك خير الأيام
يا رمضان،
يا شهر صيام وقيام
يا رمضان.
أيامك خير الأيام
يا رمضان،
يا شهر صيام وقيام
يا رمضان.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين. Dear brothers and sisters, سلام عليكم ورحمة الله. Inshallah you're progressing in good health and with good spirituality during these days of the holy month. We were discussing the concept of riya. Some scholars have attributed the emphatic importance of fasting, to the fact that riya, when it comes to the sharia, when it comes to the letter of the law, has no trace in fasting, i.e. fasting is relatively free from riya. It's riya ostentation free, because on a par with the sharia, fasting is a list of or collection of do not do X, or a list of don'ts. And therefore, since one is doing nothing, fasting is relatively free from any trace of riya, whereas with the other actions and with the other rituals, they are more susceptible. However, when we touched upon the tariqah dimensions, the story altered a bit, because we see that the story of riya is still present when it comes to the tariqah, when it comes to the spirit of the law. One cannot escape riya. One has to endeavor maximally and try to eliminate veils after veils of riya, because riya, according to the tariqah, according what Sayyid ibn Tawus had written in his Iqbal, has many delicate layers, and one can easily fall into the trap of riya. So although one may be riya free when it comes to fasting on a par with the sharia, when it comes to the tariqah, it's a different story. Now, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh, in his Adab al-Salat, has written about riya. You see, with riya, the term riya is in opposition to ikhlas. Ikhlas is referring to a sincerity, a specific sincerity, where you're dedicating your actions to Allah alone. Ikhlas has many degrees, in the same way that riya has many degrees. Ikhlas, on a par with the degrees of riya, in opposition to riya, in contrast to riya, there are layers of ikhlas. There are layers of being sincere before Allah alone. Imam Khomeini, in his Adab, he has written and mentioned almost 10 classes and 10 categories of people who fall into riya, and then in opposition to this spiritual illness, he highlights at the same time how one must make one's actions sincere and do it for Allah alone. Now, I'm not going to go through all the 10 categories. Some of them are beyond my understanding, but I will go through 4 of them in this session, and then we'll try to open them up as we go along, inshallah. Imam Khomeini writes, one of the levels of ikhlas is the cleansing of actions, be they of the heart or limbs, from mixture, so it's the cleansing of actions, from mixture with earning people's satisfaction and attracting their hearts, be it for reasons of being praised, being benefited, or other reasons. So here, when someone commits any action, and they do it, let's say, for Allah, but this is mixed with riya. It's mixed with doing that action to get to be attracted or to attract other people's satisfaction. You're doing it so that others see you or praise you, and you being benefited from other people's attentiveness to you. Your action is mixed with this level of riya. So in this first category of ikhlas, you have to cleanse your actions from such mixtures. Then he continues, this level of ikhlas is in contrast with riya. This is the fiqhi riya, the riya which has been delineated by the fuqaha, by the jurisprudence. And this is the lowest form of riya. It's the riya of the sharia. It's the easiest form. It's the lowest form. There are so many higher, more difficult traps of riya that we are susceptible to. This is the bare minimum. What is the bare minimum? When you do an action, even though it's for Allah, but it's mixed, you also do it so others become attentive to you. You do it in front of them. Now, you do it so that they praise you, or you're gaining some other benefit from such an action. The owner of such riya, of such fiqhi riya, is the lowest and is deemed amongst the most abased or disgraced, most destitute of those who commit riya. If you can't handle this first degree, the lowest form of riya, you would be counted as the lowest of the riya doers. Because you have to bear in mind, there are people who commit riya of a spiritual level. They pass in relation to the fiqh riya, but not in relation to the higher forms of riya. Then Imam continues and says, concerning the second level of ikhlas, this is the cleansing of actions from the acquisition of worldly incentives and contingent essential needs, even if the incentive of the person is that Allah graces one by means of their action. Their action in this category, the action, it's done for Allah. There's no problem there. I.e., it's not mixed with doing the action for other than Allah, for others to see. However, here, this group of people, they don't suffer like with the first class. But the incentive of the person is that Allah will grace them with worldly benefits. So this person does something for Allah in contrast to the first group. But if you were to ask them, you're doing it for Allah, they say yes. And why are you doing it? They say, well, Allah will be attentive to me and will give me worldly benefits. Here, this is not ikhlas. You're after worldly benefits here, but the action is done lillah, for Allah. But here too, there are traces of riya. because Allah here has been used as a means to something. That something here is worldly incentives, worldly benefits. For example, executing the night prayer, Salatul Layl, to increase one's sustenance, worldly sustenance. So here, you're doing it for Allah, but the reason behind it, the reason behind the reason, the incentive behind the incentive, is you're using Allah as a means to getting worldly benefits, worldly sustenance. Or the executing the prayer, or the Salatul Layl, executing the prayer that pertains to the start of the lunar month in order to be relieved from the burdens in that month. So, the Sharia has prescribed many different forms of prayers, two unit prayers that one recites either at the eve of the first day of the lunar Islamic lunar month or during the first day itself of the Islamic lunar month, whichever month it be. And here, one of the benefits, one of the worldly benefits, as prescribed by the Sharia, is that you will be relieved and saved from the burdens that that month brings with it. The burdens that will arise in that month, you will be relieved from them. Here again, it's a worldly incentive, and you're doing this two-unit prayer at the first day of the month, but you're using Allah as a means to be relieved from worldly burdens. This is a worldly incentive. And here, therefore, one is not sincere enough. One is still suffering from spiritual riya. They're doing it for Allah. They're not suffering from the fiqhi riya. But when you go and dissect the incentive behind the incentive, it's a different story. Allah isn't seen as an ends, as the goal, as the objective. Rather, the worldly benefits here become that ends for the person. Or, for example, Imam continues, the paying of charities in order to maintain good health and other worldly goals. You give charity, but you do it in order to maintain good health. See, that's different to someone who gives charity for Allah's sake, period. And who it is indifferent to them whether your sound health is maintained or not. They are just doing their duty. They're not doing it to get good health. If they're given it, they say Alhamdulillah. If they're not given it, they say Alhamdulillah. But the incentive is Allah, and the incentive behind the incentive, it's Allah's satisfaction they want to acquire. Allah's proximity they want to acquire. These people are spiritually riya free, riya of the second class, of the second level. Now, then Imam shares with us what some earlier jurisprudence, and maybe he's referring to the likes of Sayyid ibn Tawus, because Sayyid ibn Tawus had this theory, which Imam is now going to mention, although he rejects it. And the majority of jurisprudence today, maybe all of them, they don't have or share this understanding that Sayyid ibn Tawus had. Imam writes, some earlier jurisprudence have deemed this degree of ikhlas as a prerequisite to a given act of worship's soundness in instances when action is executed for purposes of attaining to such goals, i.e. they would say that their ibadah, their prayer, will be deemed void even on a Sharia level. i.e. you wouldn't have to repeat it again. No one says that today. Imam Khomeini didn't accept it either. But they say, the likes of Sayyid ibn Tawus, that if you do Salatul Layl, but it's Allah's attentiveness to you and Allah's gracing towards you of worldly benefit, your Salatul Layl will be deemed void, would be deemed batil, and therefore you would have to do it again. Or even your daily salats, if you have such an incentive, would be deemed void. They don't even regard that salat as an ibadah. Imam and most other jurisprudents don't accept that. They say this is still an ibadah, and they use traditions from Amirul Mu'mineen, alayhi salam, who, when he classifies the different forms of worship, for example, the worship of slaves, the worship of the merchants, and the worship of others, that tradition is calling all these people's worships as worship, and therefore it's not deemed void. And so Imam here then says this position is not firmly established according to fiqhi principles. Because with the fuqaha, with the jurisprudence, they look at the proximate incentive, the proximate cause, not the incentive behind the incentive, not the distal cause. It's the proximate cause they look at as their criteria. And this we can see in different principles of fiqh. Al-uqood tabi'atun lil-qusood. That transactions are a function of intention, or a function of the duty-bound intending. So, for example, if someone enters a transaction of any sort, and they say to him, why did you enter such a transaction? They say, I didn't intend it. This was totally made against my will, and it wasn't me. Well, that transaction wouldn't be acceptable. But if that person was to say, well, I did it unwillingly, I had to do it because of the pressure upon me, I was becoming bankrupt, I had to sell the house. No one forced him. It was him or her who made that intention. Okay, the distal cause was bankruptcy, or the potential of bankruptcy. The distal cause was very difficult situation or circumstances, but he intended it with his own free will at the end of the day. But sometimes that free will isn't there, that transaction won't be accepted. Now here, the fuqaha look at the proximate cause. Did they intend it with their free will? If so, that's okay, irrespective of the reasoning behind it. So here, in class 2 of Ikhlas, these people, they did it for Allah, and that's enough for the jurisprudent to say there's no fiqhi riya, and the ibadah is deemed valid and sound. But now, here, if you were to say, why did you do it? And they say, well, the reason was to receive Allah's attentiveness in relation to worldly rewards. That's another issue. It's outside the jurisdiction of the jurisprudent. They only look at the proximate cause. Or, for example, if someone is fasting, okay, and they're sleeping, and someone pours water down their throat whilst they're sleeping during their fast. Here, did they intend to drink water? We say no. And therefore, their fast would be deemed valid. They intended to fast, and this drinking of water was totally outside the jurisdiction of their free will. They were sleeping. But let's say someone comes to a faster and says, drink this water or I will beat you. This is just, you have to forgive me with the examples, but I just want to make it easier to understand. If they would say, drink the water or I will beat you, and then they drink the water, they drank the water with their own free will. Okay, so that fast would be deemed void and they would have to repeat it. The jurisprudent only looks at the proximate cause, and the proximate cause there was intention. They intended to drink it. The jurisprudent doesn't go back and see what was the reason. So here too, the same applies. And therefore, according to the principles of jurisprudence, here, this level two, where whilst you're committing yourself to an act of worship, but it's Allah's worldly benefits that you are attentive to, that doesn't make your ibadah, that doesn't make your act of worship void. And there may be some jurisprudence of old, but today this is not a problem. Okay, then Imam continues. So, such an ibadah with such incentives, the world, the attraction, or being a recipient of worldly incentives, all this shows that it's acceptable according to fiqh, to jurisprudence. But Imam continues, nevertheless, according to the people of Gnosis, of Irfan, of Ma'rifah, such a prayer has no value. Look, we're looking at it now with the lens of the tariqah, the spirit of the law. Here, your action may be accepted by the fuqaha, because the fuqaha's jurisdiction is a limited jurisdiction, or it's a jurisdiction with its own boundaries. But when you now look at it under the lens of the urafa, whose jurisdiction is limited but to another extent, has other boundaries now, when they, the urafa, look at such a prayer in the second level here, where you're looking for the worldly benefits, here, it has no value. When the urafa say it has no value, according to spirituality, it means it won't elevate you. You won't reap any benefits in the hereafter. According to the people of Gnosis, such a prayer has no value and is treated like any other legitimate merchandising, trading. What you've just done, you've traded with Allah, but a trading, a merchandising, which is just like any legitimate form of merchandising which you can see on the main streets, for example, of any given city or town. And Imam then adds, and it may even be deemed lesser in value. That salat, which had worldly incentives, may be deemed even lesser in value than the normal merchandising we carry out every day during the year. Why? Here, because in worldly trade, the trading that we do in this life, you sell a given goods and you receive a given goods. Or for example, you give money and you receive something in exchange of that money. Or sometimes it may be you exchanging between two goods. For example, you giving 1 kilogram of rice and you receive, for example, a part of a bicycle. Trading like that, for example. Although that doesn't happen these days, we buy and sell with money. But that salat, which is based on worldly incentives, Imam says it's even worse than the normal trading that we do. Because with the normal trading, it's a worldly thing in exchange with another worldly thing. But here, you're giving ibadat, a spiritual thing, in return for a worldly thing. That's belittling. You're disgracing yourself. You're belittling yourself. It would be okay if it was to do one spiritual action in return for another spiritual action. But in return for a spiritual action that you're doing, like salat, you are receiving something worldly. You're doing it with this purpose, and this is belittling. Now, sometimes you may, for example, commit the spiritual action. It's indifferent to you whether you be given a worldly benefit or not. That's okay. That wasn't your intention, but you were given it and you thank them. But sometimes, no, it's a stipulation for you. It's a condition for you that you're doing this to get that benefit. And if you don't, you'll get disappointed. You'll be disheartened. Okay. Then, concerning the third level, this is the cleansing of action from attaining to, now in class two, it was in relation to attaining to worldly benefits. Here, it's the cleansing of action from attaining to corporeal heavens and the houris and the palaces and other corporeal pleasures and the like. By corporeal, I mean bodily. But when we say bodily, it's not a bodily in the physical sense. It's bodily, corporeal, in the metaphysical sense. Like in your dreams, when you see people in your dreams, that's corporeal, that's bodily. There's a body there with color, size, and shape, but it's not physical. Heaven is going to be like that. Hell is going to be like that, or certain degrees of heaven and hell, it's going to be like that. Here, you commit an action, but you cleanse that action from seeking heavenly pleasures. This is level three, Imam writes. Level three of ikhlas. And in opposition with each level, there's a level of riyah. And therefore, this degree of spiritual riyah is when you commit an action, an act of worship, but the incentive is not to gain a worldly gain, but rather to gain heavenly, metaphysical pleasures. That's the incentive behind the incentive. And here, Imam continues, in contrast to this level, is the worshipping of workers, the worshipping of employees, so to speak, as has been alluded to in the traditions. In the eyes of the people of Allah, though, this is compared to other forms of merchandising. According to the people of Allah, the lovers of Allah, even this action, where the incentive is to receive heavenly pleasures, pleasures in the hereafter, you're a tradesman or a tradeswoman. You're trading, you're merchandising. But there's one difference here, and that's why it's called the ibadah, the worship of workers or employees. You're still trading, you're still working. And then Imam says there's one difference here, though. Here, the difference is, so this is compared to other forms of merchandising, save with the exception that the reward of the action of the merchant, the worker who wants the houris, the palaces, and so on and so forth, is much higher and superior. assuming though it's accomplished and is free from external causes that deem one's ibadah as void in the fiqhi sense. So one has to maintain the criteria delineated in jurisprudence. As long as they do that, they will be free from any harm. Okay, it still has no value for the people of Allah because you didn't do it for Allah's sake, period. That which was preoccupying you and dominating over your soul was receiving heavenly pleasures. You wanted to be a recipient of heavenly pleasures. You're just like the previous group, but there's one difference here. He says the difference is here, what you're getting in return is a metaphysical reality. It's not a worldly benefit, like with the previous class. With the previous class, we said it's belittling, because you're giving something spiritual, and in return, you're sufficing with something worldly. Here, Imam doesn't use the term belittling anymore. He doesn't say it's worse than the legitimate merchandising we see on the streets today. Rather, he doesn't say that. He says it has no value, though. But it's not worse or lower in degree than the normal merchandising. But there's only one difference. It has no value, but the difference is what you are getting in return by giving one spiritual action and receiving another spiritual, metaphysical reality, that which you're getting in return is something much higher than a worldly commodity. And so you're giving something. Since your spirituality was compromised, it doesn't matter. You receive something on a par with that spiritual compromise, and this is not deemed as belittling. And the fourth degree, here Imam writes, concerning the fourth level, it's the cleansing of action from what? From the fear of being punished and from the fear of the threatened corporeal punishments. The reason you pray or you fast or you give charity and so on and so forth is because you fear punishment. You fear that metaphysical punishment which has been threatened against you if you don't do certain acts and deeds. This is going to be problematic. Metaphysical punishment is much worse than the punishment of this realm. The punishment of this realm is limited in nature, but the punishment in the hereafter is much less limited, and in certain cases they are unlimited, they're eternal. Now this is in contrast to the ibadah of slaves, as has been alluded to in the traditions, because the slaves, they obey their master because they fear if they don't obey the master will punish them. You're doing the same before Allah. You're not committing those acts of worship for the sake of Allah, period. Rather, you're doing it out of fear that you will receive punishment, even though that punishment is a result of your own doing. But that's why you're doing good deeds before Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You're just like a slave. The analogy is good analogy here. Such worship too, also, even with this worship, it has no value before the companions of the heart. They don't see such an action as valuable and is seen as lying outside the jurisdiction of Allah's servitude. You see here, if you remember when Allama Majlisi's classification of certain people, he said that they were worshipping themselves because they didn't want their money to be lost by giving the kafara, or they didn't want the punishment to come their way. So they were just worshipping their selves, not Allah, period. So such worship too has no value before the companions of the heart and is seen as outside the jurisdiction of Allah's servitude. For the people of Gnosis, there's no difference between those who execute an action out of fear of worldly sentences or worldly penalties, and there's no difference between them and those who execute an action out of fear of punishments pertaining to the hereafter, or there's no difference between these two, or there's no difference with those who execute an action to reach worldly women, Imam is writing this, or to reach heavenly women. Now, if you're a man, it would be a woman. If you're a woman, it would be a man. Hur is a plural expression. It's the plural of Ahwar and Hura. The plural of these two terms is Hur. But Ahwar is the masculine form. Hura is the feminine form. So when you see Hur is in the Quran, it's not specific to females. Anyway, so there's no difference whether you do an action out of fear you receive a worldly punishment or sentence. For example, driving. You drive properly so you don't get fined. Although driving isn't an act of worship, but I'm just giving an example here. Or you commit an action. So this action is good driving to refrain from receiving a penalty, a fine. Or sometimes you may commit an act of worship out of fear of receiving a hereafter penalty, a punishment of the hereafter. That's two scenarios. Or you may execute an action, for example, you start a business so you get a lot of money so that you reach worldly pleasures. That's another case. Or you execute an action, it may be an act of worship, to receive not worldly pleasures, but the same kind of pleasures, but of a metaphysical nature, the heavenly pleasures. In all these four, there's no difference between these four. Why? Because none of these are done for Allah. Yes, the proximate cause is I'm doing it for Allah, but the incentive behind the cause, the distal cause, which the jurisprudence don't look, the people of the batin, they do look at it. And there they see, the ends isn't Allah. The goal isn't Allah. Allah is just used as a means to not being punished. Or as a means, a ticket way to being a recipient of worldly pleasures or heavenly pleasures. The incentive for each of these four incentives that we've just gone through here is a matter which, according to fiqhi principles, exits the action from being sound or void. That incentive behind the incentive, fiqh doesn't look at that to then deem that action being sound or void. This exits the jurisdiction of jurisprudence. But in the bazaars of the people of Gnosis, such goods, such as the driving or the salat for the particular heavenly incentives, for the bazaars of the people of Gnosis, such goods have no worth. Because here, the rationale behind this statement of Imam is because the horizons of the Urafa, the horizons of the mystics, aren't limited to the proximal incentive. Rather, they see those incentives which go beyond, and they search to purify them. So these were four levels that Imam has written, and he's added another three to these four. And in another part of Adab al-Salat in his book, he's added another three. And it gets a bit more delicate and more fine as you progress through them. If we manage to go through this much, we are succeeding. But we have to go step by step. With your permission, I won't go through the other steps because it may be just merely theoretical. When things are just merely theoretical, and there's no practical feasibility or eagerness to do them, that becomes a veil upon people. One shouldn't know too much. One should act upon that which one knows. And then, if one succeeds in that, then they learn more. Then they act upon that accordingly, and so on and so forth. But with this much that we've gone through, it's now become clear that the different layers of spiritual riya can become difficult to attain to. Ayatollah Misbah Hafidhahullah has made a very interesting and deep and very proper self-evaluating example. He says, your ikhlas has to be so incorporated, it must be so embedded within you, that in relation to your sincerity of any given action, call that action X, for example, that you do it for Allah's sake, and there's no worldly incentive behind it, and there's no heavenly incentive behind it. You do it for Allah alone. He says, or has said, in one of his lectures that, this, you can examine yourself here, that were you to be in hell, and the angels were to ask you, that if you give us this action that you did for Allah, we'll let you go to heaven and relieve you of the position you're in right now in hell, and you can go to heaven or receive less pain in hell, for example. Ikhlas, if it's truly embedded, would say, no, I'm ready to burn. However, I'm not going to compromise. That was done for Allah alone and for nothing else. Inshallah, we'll continue with one or two other examples and continue with the discussion. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa ala tahirin.